Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Her name is Phil and she dances on the sand, just like that river twisting through the starlight.
Yeah, it's that song, done that way. I'm John Schaefer, and today on Soundcheck, a look inside the collegiate a cappella subculture. It's not what you think. Plus, a celebration of the Mississippi Delta in Brooklyn. And later, live music from the off-kilter folk rocker Langhorn Slim and the War Eagles. But first, what motivates promising young college kids to take a Duran Duran song, subtract the musical instruments, add mouth percussion, and schlocky four-part harmony? Well, GQ Magazine senior editor Mickey Rapkin spent a year trying to find out. He followed this group, the Beelzebubs of Tufts University, and other collegiate a cappella ensembles around the country. He documents this hyper-competitive and slightly dorky subculture in a book called Pitch Perfect, The Quest for Collegiate Acapella Glory. And he joins us here in our studio. Mickey, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks for having me.
So, why a book about college acapella singing?
I think two things. One, all of a sudden these acapella was becoming this go-to Hollywood pop culture joke. And it was popping up in the breakup with Jennifer Aniston, where her brother was in an acapella group and sort of kicked the crap out of Vince Vaughn. And then it was on The Office, and it was on 30 Rock, and it was just all of a sudden everywhere. And it was coming on the 100th anniversary of collegiate acapella, with the Yale Whiff and Poofs coming on their centennial. And it was everywhere. But at the same time, it was nowhere. Like, the jokes are everywhere, but no one knew anything about it.
Right, so the Vince Vaughn joke is he's watching these guys sing a cappella, and he starts, you know, cracking
wise.
Yeah,
he's making fun of them, and they kick the crap out of him.
Right, okay. So, now, is it, in fact, going mainstream? I mean, when Ed Helms starts, you know, when his character is serenading Angela on The Office with his a cappella buddies piped in on the various office phones.
Exactly.
What does that do to the community?
And basically, the a cappella message boards light up. Oh my God, legitimacy! But yeah, I mean, it is becoming sort of mainstream. I mean, it's 1,200 collegiate groups in the U.S.
As opposed to what? What was it, say, 10 or 15 years ago?
Sort of like in the early 90s, there were maybe 300 groups, and it had started obviously as a Northeast Ivy League sort of thing, and then spread out across the country. But now, I mean, literally 1,200 groups in the U.S. and
in colleges.
Just on college campuses, exactly. And they're in Appalachia State. I mean, just schools that are not exactly the Northeast Ivy League stereotype that you'd think of.
All right. So why do people hate it?
I think there's something about seeing 14 guys in khakis snapping and singing like Justin Timberlake covers without instruments that it inspires a certain level of anger. But on these college campuses, the subtitle is The Quest for Collegiate Acapella Glory, and it is glory. I mean, I spent some time with the UVA Hullabahoos, and they walk around campus, and literally someone across campus who they don't know, some girl will yell, "Hey, Hullabahoo!" You know, I mean, they're the equivalent of college celebrities, rock stars.
So wait a minute, these guys, we're hearing them now, the Hullabahoos, you're telling me they're like the captain of the football team when it comes to the girls on campus?
Pretty much. I interviewed this guy from Duke, and he put it best, and he said, like, is it as good as being on the Duke basketball team? No. But is it close? Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, then. The Hullabahoos suddenly making a lot more sense to me. This is their version of How to Save a Life.
Without granting innocence, lay down a list of what is wrong, the things you told him all along, and pray to God he hears you. Yeah, pray to God he hears you. And when did I go wrong? I lost a friend. Where along in the bitterness?
No drums. That's all done with the voices of the members of the Hullabahoos from the University of Virginia. We are speaking with Mickey Rapkin, whose book, Pitch Perfect tells us about the quest for collegiate a cappella glory. So I asked you why people hate it. Obviously, a lot of people don't hate it. So why do people do this? Why do they join these groups with these silly names? Whiffenpoofs and Hullabaloos exactly. And Crocodillos.
I think there's... in no time in our culture more than now have people wanted to be famous. I mean, there's such that culture of wanting to stand out and be a celebrity and an American Idol and all of this. And there's no better place on a college campus than a cappella to do this. I mean, these groups, the Rotunda Sing is the big orientation event at UVA. It's the first week of school, and 4,000 students will come to watch the Hullabaloos sing How to Save a Life, you know? It's like, I mean, who would not want to be a part of that?
But are they watching it in the way that you would watch a monkey trying to type Shakespeare? You know, is it like, wow, look at these yahoos?
I think there's some of that where you show up and there's sort of, I call it the a cappella face, where you're sort of, your face goes blank and you're like, what exactly am I looking at? But then the smile just comes across your face because there are 4,000 people standing right behind you, and you just can't believe the applause and the excitement and the groupies.
Groupies.
Let's not forget groupies.
Okay.
Yeah.
So why then are so many people who do go to college, do join these groups, seem to have the time of their lives? When they get out of college, they don't want anybody to know about it.
Yeah, I think there's sort of that feeling that once you're off the safe grounds of a college campus and there's no archways and whatnot, people look at snapping and khakis and Justin Timberlake covers as sort of just what it is. Like, oh my God, I was in a cover band with no instruments. Like, did I just do that? But yeah, I mean, it's funny because I interviewed a bunch of celebrities for the book, and it's sort of uniformly have the same reaction. You get them on the phone, like James Vanderbeek from Dawson's Creek or Ed Helms or one of these people, and they sort of sigh. They're like, oh my God, like, I can't believe I'm about to talk about this. And then a minute
like,
later...
Oh, you found
right,
me.
Exactly. Like, oh my God. But then a few minutes later, they're so eager to tell their stories and relive those memories because it was so profound for them.
All right, now, full disclosure here, Mickey. You were a fellow traveler yourself.
Oh, yes. My own deep, dark a cappella past is coming out. I myself was a member of Cayuga's Waiters, Cornell's oldest a cappella group, I might add.
Are there numerous a cappella groups at Cornell?
Believe it or not, there are now something like 18 a cappella groups.
Just at Cornell
just
University?
Just at Cornell. I mean, you've got the R&B group and the Christian group and my personal favorite, the all-Jewish a cappella group, the High Notes. I mean, that world is what I wanted to capture in this book.
Okay. That world also includes a number of our Soundcheck listeners. We have a comment here on the Soundcheck page of our website from Nea in New York, who writes... I sang in a college a cappella group at the University of Pennsylvania. They were called the Penny Loafers. Worst song, You Got Me by the Roots. Nothing is worse than a bunch of Ivy League preppy kids trying to rap.
Oh, I love it.
Now, what about the names? The Penny Loafers, the Whiffenpoofs.
It started with the Whiffenpoofs, and I don't know exactly where the pun... All a cappella group names are puns for some reason. I don't know exactly why that started, but the first female group, the first collegiate a cappella group in general is the Whiffenpoofs at Yale. So, of course, the first female group starts at Smith, and they're the Smiffenpoofs. And it just sort of spiraled to where you get the High Notes.
Right. Now, Nea writes about the University of Pennsylvania and this group, the Penny Loafers, but you write about another group from the University of Pennsylvania, which had a big star about to emerge from it.
Exactly. I mean, John Legend, who's mentee of Kanye West, and he, when he was at UPenn, sang in the UPenn Counterparts. And not only did he sing in the Counterparts, but he competed in the International Championships of Collegiate Acapella at Carnegie Hall, singing this very song you're listening to here.
One of Us, the Joan Osborne
song, One of Us, was John Legend. Nay, John Stevens.
John Stevens back in those days.
A cappella glory.
All right, and this is the a cappella band called Counterparts from the University of Pennsylvania.
Just a stranger on the
right, Joan Osborne's song One of Us, with the UPenn counterparts doing their a cappella version, being led by a guy then known as John Stevens, nowadays well known to all as John Legend, not the only star to come out of the collegiate a cappella experience. From UCLA, there is a group called Awaken A Cappella, which actually featured Sarah Bareilles, who's doing quite well these days, and who actually wrote and later recorded this song called Gravity.
Takes too long. No matter what I say or do, I still feel you here till the moment I'm gone. You hold me without touch. You keep me without chains. I never wanted anything so much.
So, Awaken A Cappella, Mickey Ratkin, author of Pitch Perfect, The Quest for Collegiate A Cappella Glory. Sarah Bareilles here has certainly gone to glory, maybe not on the college level, but
yeah,
beyond.
Yeah, she's
that.
Having a huge career now, but the funny thing is that track, she it's on her major label debut now, actually as a studio version, but she wrote it first and recorded with Awaken A Cappella, and that track was on the 2004 Best of Collegiate A Cappella compilation, Boca, which is sort of the, now that's what I call music of collegiate a cappella.
Okay. Now, I was going to ask you, how do we have recordings of a young John Legend and a young Sarah Bareilles? I mean, is it that big a business now that they're going into recording studios?
College a cappella groups have been recording for forever there, but it sort of went from just standing around a microphone, hit record, and here we are, you record the whole thing in a couple hours, to these intense studio productions where a group like the Tufts Beelzebubs would spend $30,000 recording a collegiate a cappella album.
And we'll hear in a moment what $30,000 will buy you when you're a collegiate a cappella group. But we can take some calls. We have comments coming in on the website at WNYC.org. What do you think of a cappella singing? Do you love it? Do you hate it? Is it a hidden part of your collegiate past? And if so, are you a little embarrassed about it these days? You can give us a call, 212-264-7483. 212-264-7483. Check out my blog and leave a comment on the webpage at WNYC.org. Rory writes that he was in an a cappella group at Wesleyan University in 1988 to 1991. I started the group, he writes, with two friends after we didn't make it into the other groups that were already there. Someone in our original lineup who I sang with was Daniel Handler, better known as Lemony Snicket. So there are tons of names to be found as you cull through, Mickey.
That's a good one.
What about Osama bin Laden?
Believe it or not, it's true. Osama bin Laden sang in an a cappella group. He would record his music, and they literally sang songs about jihad and would hand it out on cassette tapes.
Wow.
That's a bootleg I wish I could find.
Really?
Yeah.
Talk about collegiate glory. All right, so you mentioned the Tufts group.
Yes, the Beelzebubs.
$30,000 spent in a recording studio. What did they get for it?
Basically, you get an album called Code Red, which... some people accused them. The album was so produced, some people accused them of that it was a studio project, that they couldn't sing those songs live. They recorded it at Longview Farms, which is this residential studio a couple hours outside of Boston where the Rolling Stones rehearsed for Tattoo You and Cat Stevens recorded and all these incredible... I mean, what a rich history the studio has. The only a cappella group to record there before the Beelzebubs was, of course, Ladysmith's Black Mambazo, and then the Tufts Beelzebubs show up.
Wow.
For a check-in for nine nights.
And people, you say, did not like... People took them to task.
They did. I mean, that album literally changed the shape of recording, love it or hate it, because the songs were... They were almost indistinguishable from the original recordings.
The original recording of this song, Mr. Roboto, is by the band Styx, but this version, believe it or not, is done entirely with the voices of the Beelzebubs.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto.
Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto. Mata uimade. Domo arigato, Mr. Roboto. Ibitsu o shirita.
You're wondering who I am.
Secret, secret, I've got a secret.
machine or mannequin.
Secret, secret, I've got a secret.
With parts made in Japan.
Secret, secret, I've got a secret.
All right, Mickey, I got to say, that is simply amazing.
It's amazing.
That's unbelievable to me. The kind of electric guitar chords, the electric drum sounds.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how wonky you want to get, but I mean, they recorded Machine Head, that Bush song on that album, and they literally, they sang it through a microphone and ran it through the same Pro Tools amp that Bush used on the original to get the exact
the
sound.
The band Bush, I should hasten to add.
Yes, exactly, the band.
Holy cow. All right, so can they do this live, I guess is the big question.
That's the thing, they can do it live. It doesn't sound exactly the same, but it sounds closer than you think. It's pretty impressive.
All right, let's see what some of our Soundcheck listeners have to say on the phone. Let's begin with Linda. Linda, you have any a cappella in your background?
I certainly do. I was singing with the first co-ed a cappella group at Williams College called the E-Flats.
Was that unusual? And maybe I should ask Mickey to weigh in on this too, for a group to be co-ed?
There are co-ed. I think the first group was the Cats and Jammers, which is German for hangover, which seems appropriate considering that it's a group from Princeton.
And Linda, do you still sing?
I do still sing, and I found my E-flats experience. I think one of the things that seems to be overlooked a little bit in the discussion is it takes a tremendous amount of musical ability to be able to sing well in an a cappella group, a lot of close harmony and small group singing, and, you know, it's... I think you're overlooking the musicianship of it all when you kind of are talking about people not wanting to listen to it. When you participate in it, it's a remarkable experience.
Well, that's a really good point. And Mickey, I sort of asked you something like this before we went on the air today, but let me do it on mic. Do you have to be musically literate? Do you have to be able to read music to be in one of these groups?
That's the thing. A lot of these groups, you don't. I mean, the Beelzebubs have all their arrangements written down, impeccably kept in a binder. But a group like the Hullabaloos at UVA sort of have a savant music major who directs the group. And then a lot of guys who never, ever sang before they got to college and just saw the Hullabaloos and thought, oh my God, I want to be a part of that. So you would be surprised how many people can almost like walk on, you know?
Okay, let's take another call. David is with us from Staten Island. David, do you have any a cappella experience yourself?
Not myself, although I sang in choir back in high school and college, but I'm actually the father of two sons who sing a cappella. One is in high school now, and my older son just finished his freshman year in college, and they both sing a cappella, so it has invaded the high school level as well.
and they, I guess they like it.
Oh, they both love music a lot. And in fact, the high school group, it's the same group, I guess. My sons are 4 years apart, so they both, they never sang together, but the high school group has actually, I guess, know someone who has a small studio, and they've recorded some songs as well, so.
All right.
It's a nice outlet for them.
And is the older son, I mean, he's in college, are they competing? Are they a competitive group?
Yes, they are. I had already heard of Boca, and they traveled, and he came home for a week, and all he did, it felt like he walked around the house singing.
So we have soccer moms. Are we going to have a cappella dads now? Is this going to be the next thing where the fathers are like beating the chorus masters? My son's not getting enough solo time.
The funniest thing is I interviewed the woman who runs the international championships of collegiate a cappella, and she has parents now calling her saying, my kid is applying to these schools. Where are they going to have the best chance of singing a cappella?
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. DM joining us on the line from Denver. DM, are you a singer or?
Well, I did sing, but I was a Glee Club groupie when I was at Notre Dame. You were talking about the groupies earlier, and
that was you.
I was one of them.
The Penny Lane of Glee Club.
So you say you were one of them. So there was actually a group of people who would follow the a cappella group around?
Oh my gosh, yes. There was when I was a freshman, there was one girl in the class ahead of me and another girl in the class ahead of her. And then when I was a sophomore, there was another girl in the class behind me. So there was like one a year. And we weren't like groupies like in the rock band sense. I mean, we would follow them around though and go to all the concerts. We'd go to the parties. We'd hang out with the guys. They were a great bunch of guys. And every Valentine's Day, we didn't have to worry about a Valentine because we got serenaded by 64 guys in tuxes and given roses.
Uh-huh. No hanky-panky in the back of the bus, though.
No, we didn't go on the bus, first of all. And I was at Notre Dame, so, you know, it was single-gender dorms and things like that.
So. Okay.
There's a little integrity. It was a little bit of a term of endearment.
All right. So
but we followed him everywhere.
Confessions of an Acapella Groupie from DM. Thanks very much. Here's a comment from Jorge right here in New York about the question, do you need talent to sing acapella? Jorge writes, at Smith College, they also have a group called Crapapella, which is formed by girls who don't know how to sing, but still they want to perform, and I tell you, they are hysterical. So I guess that's what it's really all about, isn't it? I mean, Mickey, it's a chance to make music. We've seen a rise in people doing, like, shape note singing and stuff, even here in New York, which is far away from both the Deep South and New right. England, where that kind of singing grew up. Is this just about people want to get together and sing?
I think it's ultimately a story about, I mean, all these stories are hilarious, but it's ultimately about camaraderie and fraternity and finding your place. I mean, even Sarah Bareilles, when I talked to her, said she showed up at UCLA and didn't really feel at home until she started singing with Awaken Acapella.
All right, let's take another call. Brooklyn is on the line. Peter from Brooklyn, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be on. I was in the Colgate 13. And
Hold on, because Mickey's already laughing. Why are you laughing at the Colgate 13?
I went to Cornell, of course, so we're down the road, and my first big show, we had the Colgate Swinging Gates, the ladies
oh,
of the Swinging Gates were our guest group.
All right, so Peter, you're at Colgate, you're down the road from Mickey here.
Yeah, well, first of all, there's no question that let's just say the ladies were there because of, I mean, they're really, you know, we did well for ourselves as 13ers, there's no question about
uh-huh.
it.
Uh-huh. All right.
And secondly,
family show. We'll leave it at that.
I'm so proud of it. I keep an old CD from the group before I was in it in my car, and I listened to it quite a bit. And it's actually, you know, some of it's kind of funny. There's some dated things, like there's a recording of Englishman in New York that they come in, and you could totally, it's dated like early 90s because TNC Music Factory, there's a refrain of. Everybody dance now. It's just every time it comes on, I have to change it. But other than that, I love acapella, and I wish I'm a chef now. So I wish I had the time to be in a post college group because I would totally do it.
All right, so. Peter, thanks very much. Mickey, do you have a chance as a post collegiate to do any singing still?
Not sober. But we, of course, my friends and I will get together now and again. We actually reunited to sing at a friend's wedding last year, which was pretty hilarious.
Jonathan Coulter. Coulter.
Oh, a different wedding. Oh,
okay.
A different, yeah.
All right. Mickey Rapkin is the author of Pitch Perfect, The Quest for Collegiate Acapella Glory, and he is a former member of this group, Cayuga's Waiters, one of the oldest acapella group at Cornell University. You look pained, Mickey. Is this you that we are hearing here?
That was me. I was the first voice in this. Of course, I graduated in 2000, so we were at the height of the Backstreet Boys, and we were very conflicted. Should we sing this song or should we not? So the idea was it would be part of a skit. So we did sing I Want It That Way, which would segue, if you had time to play the whole track, into Christina Aguilera's What a Girl Wants, of course.
Which, of course,
naturally.
Makes the whole thing
worthwhile.
More sensible, yes. Here's a little bit from Cayuga's Waiters featuring Mickey Rapkin.
That way, your fire one desire. Yes, I know it's too late, 'cause I want it.
Still to come on Soundcheck, as a festival brings the Mississippi Delta to Brooklyn, we'll see what makes that place, that's the Mississippi Delta, so unique. And later, some high-energy folk rock live in our studio from Langhorne Slim and the War Eagles. This is Soundcheck.